Well, we want the truth. And there is a fact-based reality. Perhaps we've gotten away from it in recent years, but there is a fact-based reality.
And you can't have peace, I don't think, based on lies.
The Holocaust did not begin in the gas chambers. It began with words.
Words and actions. Contexts and consequences of propaganda. Just a few comments from a forum held at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. Our subject is the power of words to shape public opinion and behavior. Our moderator, Arthur Miller, will be confronting panelists with a series of decisions where the right answer is anything but clear. I'm Amy Eddings, and this is a Fred Friendly Seminar. This dialogue was held in concert with the National Holocaust Museum and its exhibit, State of Deception, The Power of Nazi Propaganda. We're looking at the history and effects of propaganda, from the Holocaust to Rwanda and beyond. With us, a former Minister of Justice, a war crimes prosecutor, a filmmaker from Rwanda, and an eminent group of journalists, Bob Schieffer, Christiane Amanpour, and Kamal Kerspayich. People who have worked high in government, James P. Rubin, Michael Gerson, Wesley Moore, Erwin Kotler, Stephen Rapp, and from academia and the arts, Stephen Luckert, Daniel Allen, Scott Strauss, and J.B. Rutagarama. We're challenging everyone with a hypothetical narrative, a sudden crisis, ethnic conflict and the effects of propaganda in Northland and Midrain. Those are two regions in Southland, a country we've invented for this exercise. We'll begin with CBS veteran newsman Bob Schieffer, Bosnian journalist Kamal Kerspayich, and CNN's international correspondent Christiane Amanpour. Our moderator is professor of law at New York University, Arthur Miller.
Christiane, you are a correspondent for Global News Network. And you're in Southland because the new Secretary of State is touring the region. Suddenly, something happens up in the northern part of Southland, in a province called Midrain. Some bombs went off in a shopping center. It's a shopping center that Southland military people frequent. And tragically, about 150 people have been killed.
Anytime a bomb goes off in this area, particularly when the Secretary of State of America is there meeting with the president, then we all have to rush into action. And we will be going to find out what is going on and who actually got killed.
The local police chief is holding sort of an informal conference. And he said, the signs are that these were bombs set off by some gem smugglers. You see, in that area, they discovered some gem deposits a few years ago, right there in Midrain. And actually, it started a Free Midrain movement. In any event, he says, it looks like these were the gem smugglers whose ring was broken up by an army detachment a week or two ago. So it looks like one of those revenge kinds of bombings.
What I found in previous similar situations is that often what we're told turns out not to be exactly the facts and the truths.
Well, you get a couple of interviews with some survivors, and there's beginning to be a few postings. And the postings suggest that all the people, or almost all the people killed, were Southerners, Southlanders, and that the attackers seemed to be Midrainians. So there you are with this very informal press meeting in that cameraless room with the police chief. He says, look, these were criminals attacking innocent men, women, and children. It would be terrible if you were to tell anyone in your report that it's Midrainians against Southlanders, because it may lead to further violence.
I'm not going to be automatically cynical or anti the police chief, but I'm certainly not going to take his orders on how I'm going to write and report the story.
Well, Bob's going on air in 15 minutes. He's your anchor. So what are you going to say in 15 minutes?
Well, you're going to report what you know.
Which
is? How many people were killed,
mm-hmm.
What the police chief says, whether or not you've gotten any confirmation, if you've been able to talk to somebody else that has a different point of view. Basically, what reporting is going to the scene, getting as close to it as you can, and then reporting what you find out, certainly on the first report.
So you're not going to honor his request?
No.
No.
And furthermore, we'll probably tell our viewers that the police chief told us.
Not to.
No, that he told
so
us.
So that's
that
rubbing
they are,
salt in
no,
the
no,
wound.
No, that he told us they are Southlanders.
Mm.
You know? We're going to say what we know at the time. We are there to report the facts. We've rushed over here. We've brought our camera people. And it's going to take some time to track down the full facts. But right now, this police chief is telling us this.
Yeah, we're reporting what we know.
Kamal Krspajic, you're an award-winning journalist from Bosnia. Do you have a different view, or would you report it the same way?
I think I would report it the same way.
And you're not affected by the chief's strong expression of desire not to put an ethnic touch on this?
No, I think he's not in a position to direct reporting. He can have his peers, he can have his concerns, but that shouldn't affect reporters' work on the ground.
Michael J. Gerson, as a former aide and speechwriter, what do you see?
I know government officials. I've been a government official. Their primary job in a situation like this is damage control. That's what their superiors want them to do in this circumstance. Try to minimize the situation, put it in a framework so that it will get less attention because it's embarrassing to their country, embarrassing to the officials in charge of security, embarrassing to the Secretary of State who's visiting their country. They don't want that kind of situation. So I think there is...
He just wants peace, Michael.
With a job. Yeah, and it's different than the job of a journalist.
Well, we want the truth. And there is a fact-based reality. Perhaps we've gotten away from it in recent years, but there is a fact-based reality. And that can get us as close to the objective truth as is humanly possible if we're determined to look for it. And what I've been finding, and I've been telling Bob and our viewers, is that there is, in fact, a little bit of an independence movement brewing in Midrania. And so this is countering what the police chief has been telling us, and we've discovered that.
It turns out there was a stringer in the area, and he picked up some video. The video is of a woman in her 20s. She is in the rubble. Her dead husband is lying in front of her. She is cradling her dead 6-year-old son. And your interpreter says she is saying those monsters, those Kayabesh, how could they kill my 6-year-old son, those Kayabesh, those monsters? Your interpreter says there's no strict translation for the word Kayabesh, but it's quite clearly a very derogative word for Midranians. It's insulting. You have this tape. What are you going to do with it?
Most likely, because of the age we live in and because this is television and it's immediate, we'll probably air that tape and we'll explain it and we'll get the translation and we will either with a voice say what the translation is or with words as a subtitle. And that will most definitely increase the mystery about what is going on, because by that time, it will be strange to think that gem criminals have been killing men, women, and children. And we've been told a certain story by the only official who we've had access to as yet. And we still don't know the full extent of the truth.
But you
and the
sense,
full extent
you
of the
sense
facts.
These
but we
words
will,
are inflammatory. They're inflammatory.
Well,
you don't
I
speak Midranian.
But you can
say. A lot of people
say
who will see this do speak Midranian.
You can say this woman said, when you're showing that picture. And yes, I think you show the picture because this is a tragedy. This is a human tragedy. 150 people have been killed. What better way to explain what's happened and how awful it is than to see this woman holding her child? I think you have to be very careful in the very beginning to say, this woman said, and to explain she used a word that is derogatory towards certain groups there. But yes, I think you have to put that on television. But,
and I'll remember and I'll report that actually in certain places where I had been, for instance in Sarajevo, as Kamal will remember, or even in Rwanda, there were groups who used exceptionally derogatory language about the other group. And it'll trigger something in my brain. It'll trigger a memory, it'll trigger the experience, and it'll make me ask more questions. What really happened here? Who is the victim? Yes, they're the victims now, but what happened here to cause this situation? In Rwanda, people called the other side, one side called the other side cockroaches. And this was all part of a bigger plan of dehumanization.
Erwin Kotler. You're an international human rights lawyer. What do you think?
Well, I think it has to be reported as the inflammatory language of the anguish of a victim. It would be much different if, in fact, it was the police chief who used the derogatory term. Or it would be different if, in fact, a radio station of the Southlanders began to use derogatory terms. Right now, we have the anguished expression of a victim. That deserves to be reported, but also has to be reported in context as the anguished expression of a victim, not yet any kind of state support for that kind
of thing. But it is something that will be broadcast around the world, and by its very nature, it is something that will be broadcast repetitively, constantly. Danielle Allen, you're an historian of political thought. What do you see?
That's where I have to say I do think an important part of the question is exactly how audiences are prepared to watch, listen, respond to, receive the material produced by the media. I think it's right that difficult elements of the truth need to be reported. And you can't have peace, I don't think, based on lies. But then that means that one needs an active culture that is capable in terms of responding to those kinds of difficulties. It doesn't sound as if that exists in Southland and Midrania. And so the question would be, where are we there in terms of that broader culture and its capacity to listen to these kinds of materials? What happens?
Danielle Allen, our political theorist from Princeton University, understanding the environment in which the news is heard as we think about the power of words to frame perceptions. We're talking about a conflict in the invented nation of Southland. A bomb in a shopping center has gone off, and it's unclear if this is a criminal act or the first sign of a campaign of terror by minority agitators. In a moment, we're going to hear the reverberations of that blast as the crisis deepens and power politics comes into play.
Well, I think Michael and I would be negotiating the words, probably.
But with due respect to the State Department.
From the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Words and Actions, a Fred Friendly seminar. It's time to deal with the meetings between the American Secretary of State and the President of Southland. But Southland Television has continued playing tape in which an anguished woman appears to blame the shopping center bomb on Midranians, inhabitants of Southland's minority province. And now there are statements being made by Southlanders saying, this looks bad. This looks as if we're under attack and vulnerable to slaughter, that is, unless we defend ourselves. So we have the portent of violence. We're turning for advice to James Rubin, who served as a spokesman in the State Department of the Clinton administration, and to Michael Gerson, who was a policy advisor and speechwriter for President George W. Bush. Our moderator, Arthur Miller.
Let me add some texture. The president of Southland, with whom the secretary is to meet, is up for re-election in 6 weeks, clearly losing. A president who has always put state security and civil order very high on his agenda. It is also true that the media companies in Southland are owned either by family members or very close associates of the president. Any reaction? James Rubin.
Yeah, well, that does put a different cast on the situation. I think what we would be doing then would be getting on the phone with the president's staff and trying to find out why so much attention is being paid to this. And I think we would then be calling back home to our own intelligence apparatus to find out what they think the risks are here, and scheduling the possibility of additional meetings with the president of Southland to ensure that we can perhaps play a role in tamping this down.
But with due respect to the State Department,
distance yourself, Michael.
Predisposition of the State Department in matters like this, particularly the regional bureaus that deal with Southland, is the maintenance of relationships, not the confrontation of problems. There's a great deal of inertia in the system. Usually the response from the State Department is, let's go slow. Let's not compromise our relationship with an important ally.
Well, you know, it's funny that Michael said that, because I found when we got into government in 1993 and the Balkan issue was on the agenda, all the people who worked in the bureaus, the people who actually were responsible for the issue, were trying to get the United States to use military force against their client states. And so these sort of myths about the State Department having uniform patterns of sucking up to their regional countries or having have not proven
true. I will assume that sucking up is a technical term.
That's right.
Now, it turns out that in the embassy, there is a very smart fella who has really steeped himself in Southland, Northland, Midrange. And he says to you, I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but I think we better distance ourselves from this propaganda. Now, Steve Luckert, as an historian of the Holocaust, there was a time, wasn't there, when the word propaganda didn't have all of the negative connotations that it has today?
Sure. Going back to its very origins, the word itself is Latin, and it came to be attached to the papacy in the 17th century for the propagation of Catholicism throughout the world. But it was after the First World War that it really started to take on negative connotations of exaggerations, of lies, of untruths. And that it created the very fear that people could be molded or set into motion by propaganda.
Christian.
GNN has an exclusive. Well, we've done our research. And we've found out that actually the president of Southland is very interested. He's not just tough on security, but he's also a rather rabid nationalist. And he knows that the only way to keep his power is to hang on to that province of Midrania, which does have some Southlanders there, but is majority Midranian.
So it's time to speak to the president of Southland, our strategic ally. Clearly wants a statement from the Secretary of State that the United States stands behind Southland in this war against terror.
Obviously, if there was a strategic ally, that would mean that we had really, really good reasons to want to maintain our relations with this country, whether they were military reasons or political reasons or economic reasons. And so somebody in the group would probably be in this, what you might call the human rights school, and would say that something really bad is going on here, and we need to reflect that. And somebody in the room would take that awful State Department position of actually wanting to have good relations with other countries and reflect that in the statement. And I think we'd probably try to split the difference, make the point to the president of Southland that we support him as a government, But as the representatives of the United States, we're going to say what we think to be true. We will reflect what we think to be exaggerated media reporting of this incident.
Now, if these two in Southland get you on the phone, Michael, what's your reaction?
There is often some wisdom in an initial reaction in not airing on one way or another. But the reality is, in situations like this, unfolding genocide, sometimes those early hours matter greatly, and the pressure matters greatly. And if you start to put off decisions, important and difficult decisions, you can go down a certain path or road, and it's very hard to return. So that, to some extent, is the judgment. The lucky thing in this case is that the Secretary of State is on the ground. Often in these cases, there's not as much focus early on in a crisis like this.
Jamie Rubin, what words can the Secretary of State use in this situation?
Well, I think Michael and I would be negotiating the words, probably. I think there would probably be some standard language that would be included in the statement reflecting the length and durability of the relationship. And then the discussion would be about what kind of words to use about the stirring up of ethnic hatreds that's going on the TV set. And we would talk about whether to express outrage, whether to threaten to follow this issue up with additional action, whether to express concern, or precisely how to formulate our interest in this stirring up of the ethnic tensions.
Right. At this point, it would be a debate on whether to give a public warning or not, mm-hmm. because there's a back channel here with the Secretary of State who's going to meet with the president. Do you say, our relationship's on the line, don't do anything stupid? Mm-hmm. Or do you make a kind of veiled warning in public, which would send that message with greater volume and urgency?
Issue a public warning or use diplomatic back channels? How do other nations tell Southland's president he must calm the situation and not stir ethnic tensions?
And they're all happily telling the world that this is just an ugly old civil war, centuries of, you know, intolerance and grievances. But we're seeing something else on the ground.
In a moment, we continue with words and actions, the contexts and consequences of propaganda. From the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., this is a Fred Friendly Seminar.